from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Braves and baseball fans, it's time to take a trip from coast to coast across Major League Baseball.
There it goes, a long drive. If it stays fair, home run.
One strike away. Sandy into his windup. Here's the pitch. Swung on and missed. A perfect game.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom on the run. Yes! The Atlanta Braves have given you a championship. Listen to this crowd.
Left side, Swanson to first.
Braves and Baseball Talk, straight from the diamond.
Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer on your home today. And Window Nation. Call the pros at Window Nation at 866-90-NATION.
Here's Grant McCauley.
Hello and welcome to From the Diamond right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. It is a Sunday. We're wrapping up the weekend. The Braves, though, not quite done with the Philadelphia Phillies. They've got Sunday Night Baseball. This show will lead you up to first pitch of that. For those of you listening to the podcast, well, just pretend like we know what's going to happen because you're listening to it late. But as we sit here live on a Sunday, we can talk about the broad strokes of what has been an important road trip for the Braves, an important series, obviously, against the Phillies, any and all jokes aside, for the Braves' hopes of getting back into this National League East race or giving the Phillies a finish, at the very least, over the final month. We have seen kind of the highs and the lows of that over the past week or 10 days. We'll get into, of course, a little bit of that. The path to October in general for the Braves, we've got to chart that, and there's a lot still to be figured out over the next 26 or 25 games, depending on when you tune in to the show here. But the Braves are playing some meaningful baseball as we finally, in this odyssey, have reached the final month of the regular season. It's felt like at times that this whole season has just kind of whizzed by. Like, it seems not long ago that I was making that long drive down to spring training, and it was a very different time for the Atlanta Braves 6 months ago. You don't need me to tell you that. But that's what we do here on the show. We discuss it all, good, bad, or indifferent. And now here we are, as the calendar turns to the month of September, on a very different journey than I think anybody had any idea was ahead for this Braves club. But this road trip, an important one for Atlanta. And it started off in the best possible fashion with a sweep of the Minnesota Twins, another playoff-caliber club, another team that has a chance to get into its own divisional race and, at the very least, make some noise in the wild card. And then rolling into Philadelphia with what you felt like was about as much momentum as the Braves have had in quite some time. I would say the previous five series for Atlanta has to feel a lot more like where the Braves thought they would be over the course of the season. They had won five consecutive series. And that may not sound like a huge deal, but when you watch the Braves stumble out of the All-Star break and lose 6 out of 7, including 6 in a row, kind of right the ship and then turn around and lose 6 in a row, get absolutely posterized by the Milwaukee Brewers at home, you started to wonder, did this thing just completely go off the tracks in the span of a couple of weeks right out of the All-Star break? You had, you know, important pitchers hitting the injured list. We've had more injuries since then, and injury has been the one constant, it feels like, for the Braves all season long. That and some very good pitching. I guess we can throw that in there. So there are two sides to that coin. But what the Braves have managed to do over the last couple of 3 weeks is to more than right the ship. And it's more than just about what's happening in the National League East, which the Braves have won for the last 6 years and knew it was going to be an uphill climb to get back into a division in which the Philadelphia Phillies got off to such a great start. And even though they have slumbered in the second half a little bit, or stumbled, I should say, they may be slumbering at the moment, but look like they're waking up, especially at the plate, this was going to be a tall order in the final month. And this series that they're playing currently over the course of this weekend was one that you felt like the Braves had to have that. if they wanted to take that step into the division and get themselves back in that race and really, really, as I said earlier, make a finish of it. But when game one went wrong for the Braves, it kind of felt like a little bit of that momentum had slipped through their fingers, much like that game did. After jumping out to a nice 4-0 victory, a couple of key home runs by the Phillies, one that seemed like it might have been as one of those cases of it's better to be lucky than good, and the second one just a key shot by a key player at a key time to put them out in front. And that 5-4 victory, I felt like, kind of took the starch out of the sails for the Braves a bit. They did bounce back, as this club has done and shown it can do here recently, but then unable to get the offense going against one of the game's best pitchers. I'll stipulate on Saturday, Zach Wheeler was terrific, and the margin of error for Max Fried was zero, because that's how many runs the Braves scored. And that's kind of been the story for this Braves club and this Braves pitching staff for large portions of the season. No matter how good the pitching is, some of these nights, it just seems like the offense can't get it going. Now, that has felt a little bit different in the past couple of 3 weeks, but it is still kind of there. But more to the point, and I think big picture, and what you're looking at is the Braves march into September, holding on to the third wild card spot in the National League, a couple of games ahead of the New York Mets coming into Sunday. Braves still have to play their game, finish up their series, head into a Monday off day, which, by the way, the Braves not playing on a holiday? What is this? I thought the only holidays they didn't play on were Christmas, well, Thanksgiving, Christmas, New Year's, and I guess you could count playing on Valentine's Day since they report to spring training around that time. I don't know. But either way, they like to have those holidays, whether it's, you know, Memorial Day, Labor Day, 4th of July. They like to have all those at home, and they, for whatever reason, here on Labor Day, are not going to be playing. But they will start a three-game series with the Rockies after that, and we'll get to all of that. But back to the point, and back to where the Braves are right now. They are holding on to a postseason spot. And as I've talked about on the show for the last month, the focus right now has to be getting in by whatever means necessary. And when they do, if they do, we'll say when first. But this pitching staff and what it has been doing, especially here lately, but really over the course of the entire season, especially in the rotation, has to have you feeling like Atlanta's got that puncher's chance come October, where there are going to be some clubs that are going to look at that matchup and think, well, the Braves may not score as much as they did a year ago, may not even be close, but I don't know if we want to run into Chris Sale, Max Fried, and Ronaldo Lopez in a short series. I don't know if we want to expand that out and throw Spencer Schwellenbach into that mix. And then your fifth starter all of a sudden is the guy with the best postseason resume of the whole bunch, is Charlie Morton. I know he's 40, and I know he's not that number one pitcher he was signed to be 3-4 years ago, but the Braves have a pitching staff that's about as complete as it gets, that a lot of clubs would very much like to have that. But can they get this offense going? One of the indicators, I feel like, of this offense and how far it can go in October, the heights that it could reach, and by that I mean just being able to give your pitchers the regular run support they need, it rests on the shoulders of number 28. It's been Matt Olson this season that has, I think, been that missing piece in the middle of the order among the Braves who are actually available to play a baseball game for you. Losing Austin Riley here, what, 3 weeks ago? An awful turn for the Braves. Prior to that, losing Ozzie Albies. A cruel twist. Ronald Acuna Jr. tearing his ACL at the end of May. Not exactly what you're looking for if you're trying to, you know, run it back and have that 2023 lineup capability, because you don't even have all hands on deck. Then you throw in a couple of months of no Sean Murphy, a couple of months of no Michael Harris. It's been an odyssey. But the Braves still find themselves in position for the postseason. If they can just play their best baseball at the most important time, which includes finishing strong over the next 4 weeks, but then just getting into October and clicking in some way, shape, or form like they have the past 3 or so weeks, I think you could be looking at a club that can look at itself, as most teams should want to do when they get into the postseason, and say, why not us? But you got to get there. And we have seen last year, I know I've talked about this all summer long, for those of you who walked into spring training 2023 and said that you couldn't wait for the Diamondbacks and the Rangers to meet in the World Series, congratulations. I don't know how much you want off of that, but I hope it was a lot. Prior to that, in 2022, I think we saw, as we did in 2023, a lot of the clubs that came in with the best records, including the Braves, bounced out of the postseason pretty early. So if the Braves are coming in through that wild card route, and I wrote about this for the Marietta Daily Journal this past week, you can check out the link on social media. You can find me on what's formerly known as Twitter, currently called X for reasons unbeknownst to the vast majority of the population of the planet Earth. But I wrote about, could this road, the less traveled road for the Braves, who don't have a lot of experience with a wild card and what they have had, It's kind of a 50-50 proposition. They swept the Reds back in 2020. You might remember that when it first became a 2-out-of-3 series. But prior to that, there was a little game in 2012 that we don't talk about a whole lot that involved the erroneous call of the infield fly rule. That's the Braves' wild card experience. Fortunately, it doesn't all come down to one game and one bad call. Well, knock on wood, you hope it doesn't. But it's not the one-game wild card scenario. But can the Braves, as currently comprised with the rotation that they have, and wanting to keep the rhythm that maybe they didn't have the last couple of years, use the wild card as the route to just stay on task and stay on target? And I'm not here to tell you that they didn't do the work over the course of the week off that they had in each of the last two Octobers. I think they did, as best any club knows how to. But when you're sitting around for 5-6 days with no real game competition, and I'll say in 2022, I feel like they needed it if they were going to have Spencer Strider even start a game for them. And obviously that didn't go well. And the last couple of years have been pretty fluky with the pitcher injuries on top of that. So maybe they needed that time to rest and recharge and, you know, felt like that was going to be the route to take. And winning the National League East has been something the Braves take a lot of pride in. You might have noticed they've done it quite a few times, 6 in a row here. Prior to that, not all in the National League East, but the 14 straight titles that were all throughout the course of the 90s and the early 2000s. I mean, this is a club that has pretty much set its sights on, there's one clear route to punch our ticket to the postseason. We win our division. That's not as clear this year, or the path is a little bit steeper because of what the Phillies have been able to do, and not just in this series, but what the Phillies have been able to do pretty much since the Braves went into their offensive tailspin at the start of May. But the second half, the door has been left at least ajar, and you felt like maybe this series was going to be a little bit of an opportunity for the Braves to get back into it. But it looks like best-case scenario now is a split, which all that does is just tear 4 days off of the calendar as the days and the games are dwindling down. So you're kind of right back where you started. If the Braves are able to take Sunday's game, be 5 games out. If they lose it, they're 6 games out, which is not unsurmountable. I mean, we've seen crazier things happen, but again, I think the focus has to be, and we've heard a lot of this from Brian Snitker here lately, and we'll talk about some of the different things and machinations that go into this, including, you know, how do you deploy your bullpen every day? Because, news alert, you can't use the same 3 guys in 25, 26 straight games. That's just not going to happen. And there are going to be bad nights in the bullpen for your best relievers, for your, you know, final guy on the roster, 26th man, if you want to call him that, or the 13th guy on the pitching staff. But you got to do the best that you can. And he basically said, coming into Philadelphia, I'll paraphrase here, all the series, we got to win them all. I'm not putting more weight on this one than I need to put on the next one. Because if you do come in and say you win the series against the Philadelphia Phillies, I know they can't do that now, but this is 3 days ago. And then you go out and lose 2 out of 3 to the Rockies, and the Phillies turn around and take 2 out of 3 from their next opponent. Well, you're right back where you started again. And that's been the crazy thing about it. I might have Justin Toscano of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on a little bit later and kind of discuss the phenomenon that's been, especially in the second half, where if the Braves had been able to avoid the 6-game losing streaks, and I don't mean win all 6 of those games, but if they had taken the 2 6-game losing streaks that they had in the second half here and just split those games, this series, the Braves, I believe, if the math is correct, and again, I'll have to go back and look, but we'll call it, it would have been a dead heat between these two teams. And it's possible, if I looked at it right, and again, I didn't major in math, but I've watched a lot of baseball and talked about a lot of statistics, the Braves might have actually mathematically been ahead by a game, just by virtue of splitting the 6 games. But since this is not an episode of Marvel's What If, that did not happen, and you were not able to. But I'm just telling you, it's been that close. Like, those are the kind of things that, you know, could swing one way or another and still could over the next 25 games. But obviously, as we know, that window is getting tighter and tighter and tighter. And the Braves, I think, just have to focus to get back to, I guess, my point as well, as I focus, is playing the best baseball they can. And what Brian Snitker was talking about is every single game, every single series, we got to try to win them. And the Braves, I think, are well aware of that at this particular juncture in their season. But we got a lot to get into on this edition of the show. As always, we're going to talk about some of the good signs that we've been seeing here at the plate lately. None bigger than that of Matt Olson. We'll get into that. I'll have Justin Toscano of the AJC joining me to discuss the happenings on this road trip and the path to October, of course. And my buddy Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star is going to join me to discuss one of MLB's best surprise teams this year, the Kansas City Royals. Jam-packed episode of From the Diamond coming your way right here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more, Rex.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Taking a look around the league with more of our From the Diamond with Graham McCullough. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get 2 windows free with every 2 you buy and pay nothing for 2 years on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. I'm Grant McCauley, live from the Kia Studios on a Sunday afternoon. We are walking you up to the Sunday night baseball matchup between the Braves and the Phillies. For those of you who will tune in on the podcast, though, when you should, if you're not already subscribed, you can get it wherever you find your podcast. You can also find it on the Odyssey app. You will know the outcome of the Braves and the Phillies tonight. But as of now, we don't know how this is going to go scenario-wise. But best case scenario, Atlanta's able to split this series. Worst case, they lose 3 out of 4 to the Phillies and will be, I think, disappointed, A, in the series, and B, in a larger sense, I guess, in a road trip that had begun in such a great fashion and just didn't finish up that way. But we will find all of that out as we move ahead. But I did want to kind of look at the month of August because I don't know if everybody noticed this or not, but it is somehow amazingly September. It feels like it was just the All-Star break. You know, for those of us in the baseball world, and maybe speaking in the royal we here, prior to that, though, it just kind of felt like this season was so long to get to the All-Star break, and I would imagine that that is in no small part to what the Braves were suffering through with their lack of offense, with all of the injuries they've been dealing with, and those have not stopped in the second half either. For those of you who have been following this team, that's been one of the only constants for this club all year long. But that aside, I didn't want to get out of the month of August, really, or go too far ahead into the month of September without looking at this month that was for the Atlanta Braves, because I do think we could see the point in which things kind of started to right themselves, to turn around, and to get this club back on the track that it needs to be. Regardless of the outcome of Sunday's game in Philadelphia, the Braves have been playing a better brand of baseball over the past at least 5 series coming in to the weekend set in Philadelphia, because as you go back and look at the start of August, it was just this great opportunity, I felt like, for the Braves to get themselves on the right track. And unfortunately, it just didn't go that way because they won the first 2 games of a 4-game series against the Marlins, and then they lost the final 2. And then the Milwaukee Brewers came into Truist Park, and the only way I can describe it is they laid the absolute smackdown on the Braves in that 3-game series, outscoring them, I believe, 34-12. Just a monstrous series for the Brewers to take all 3. And then go out to Colorado, lose the first game there, and that's your second 6-game losing streak of the second half. And prior to that, that 6-game losing streak the Braves had coming out of the All-Star break was the longest losing streak the club had had since September of 2017, when we were still in what was referred to as the rebuild, which lasted for, as it turned out, about 3 seasons. Putting that aside, though, the Braves were able to get themselves back on track. They took 3 out of 4 from a Giants club that was trying to surge into the wild card picture. They have since faded back into the pack. Took 2 out of 3 from the Angels, but the biggest loss in that series was not the game, but rather the loss of third baseman Austin Riley, who was hit in the hand and suffered that fracture and is out for 6 to 8 weeks. But the Braves came home. They pulled themselves up by their proverbial bootstraps. They signed Gio Urshela, and they took 2 out of 3 from the Philadelphia Phillies. They followed it up by taking 2 out of 3 from the Washington Nationals, and this has kind of been a point of contention for the Braves this year as you look at their schedule. 4-7 against the Nationals. That's not what you want from a club that is routinely 10 to 15 or more games under 500 and is very much in the midst of its own rebuild. The Braves didn't get to face Patrick Corbin in that series. Maybe that was the difference in taking 2 out of 3 or getting a sweep. But jokes aside, The Nationals have been a thorn in the side of the Braves, and as I've talked about many times on the show, this year and in other years, there are just clubs in your division, or in any division, they don't have really any chance of winning it. But they're going to make it really hard on one of the clubs that wants to by playing them really tough head-to-head, and the Nationals have been that for the Braves this year. But after taking 2 out of 3 from Washington, the Braves went on to sweep the Minnesota Twins, and pretty convincingly, in 3 very well-played baseball games, and roll into Philly, where dropping the first one really took kind of the shine off of this road trip, certainly off of the series, as the Braves are going to have to try to battle for that split on Sunday. But winning 5 consecutive series coming into this weekend had the Braves, I think, trending back in the direction that they needed to be. Now, welcome sight for the Braves, who have been winning a lot more than they've been dealing with the frustration of defeat here lately, which was kind of a theme for most of May and all of June and a good portion of July as well. But Matt Olson has finally started to turn a corner, one of their biggest bats coming to life at the right time, it would seem like, or at least a critical time. And clearly he's got to keep it going, but Olson finally hitting for some power consistently. There's just been these little pockets where, all right, well, Matt Olson seems like he's maybe back. And then it would be a couple of tough weeks for him. And there were long periods of time where the home runs, the runs batted in, and this is a guy who's been batting cleanup, by the way, for most of the season. They just weren't there. To the point where, and not to point the fingers at any one guy, because the Braves and their offense, it's not one guy's fault. There's a lot of responsibility to go around. I won't even call it blame. But his streak of 7 consecutive games with an extra base hit ended on Saturday, but only because he was robbed of a home run. So do with that what you want. But the big swings are there. 18 extra base hits in the month of August for Matt Olson. That's a pretty good little number there. I believe one of his best months of his career. And it looks especially good when you say that in June and July, Matt Olson had combined in those 2 months for 17 extra base hits. So it was a get-right month of August for him. And the Braves come into Sunday's game doing a little bit of slugging on the whole here in the second half. They had 70 home runs coming into the day, most in MLB, just ahead of the New York Yankees. But despite that power, Atlanta also came into the final game of this Philly series 14th in Major League Baseball in runs scored since the All-Star break. So there's some very obvious questions to ask. Why is that? One of, I think, the bigger reasons for it is that the top of the order has continued to be a bit of a mess for the Braves. And one of the big acquisitions, the big acquisition that they made at the trade deadline, hasn't really made an impact yet. Outside of going off at Coors Field, which is a place that is very nice to hit in, Jorge Soler has really just not been able to get on track here in Atlanta. And he's been batting primarily first or second in the order. And that's out of necessity and also out of design, because you needed to have somebody that could start to affect the game in the kind of ways, not the same way, but the kind of ways that your normal leadoff hitter would in Ronald Acuna Jr. But Soler, after pulling up with that hamstring injury in San Francisco, since coming back from that, pretty lackluster. 2 for 27, 1 homer. That's his only RBI. It has 7 walks, though, so finding his way on base here and there. But just really not been able to get on track. Brian Snitker was asked a little bit about that. I mean, what do you do with Soler? Do you want him in the leadoff spot? Do you want him kind of batting second? I think with Austin Riley out, it makes some sense to bat him second just to give him some RBI opportunities, because he does have a ton of power. But you have to solve the leadoff spot, and we'll get to that in a moment. But Soler has the opportunity here in the month of September. If it's not Matt Olson, who the focus has been on for a lot of this year, you need Jorge Soler to come in and make an impact, hit for power, and do the things that he has been known to do and the things that he has done in a Braves uniform before. But part of the problem is some of the other supporting cast also not swinging the bat so well. Michael Harris II, who, by the way, made one of the best catches I've seen by just about anybody in recent memory on Saturday, leaning over the top of the wall in right center in Philadelphia to rob Austin Hayes of a home run. It was so good that when you get the tip of the cap from the hitter himself, an outfielder by trade who knows exactly what went into making a catch like that and how improbable it was, you know you've done something pretty good. And Michael Harris has done a lot of that in center field, and it is great to have him back out there to run the ball down in the gaps, to make the plays that, quite frankly, were not being made with him out for a couple of months, no matter who was out there. But he's also not been able to find himself consistently at the plate, and this is another guy that you're putting in, typically, one of the first couple of spots in the order, and he's back at leadoff on Sunday. He's also hit a little bit in the 5-6 spot, or I believe just in the 6 spot, at least for now. But 215 with 2 home runs, 5 RBI, 3 walks, and 21 punchouts in his last 69 plate appearances. And I say that because his first plate appearance, because he's had 70 since coming off the IL, well, it was at Grand Slam. But since the Grand Slam, batting just 215 and piling up some strikeouts here has Michael Harris. But, you know, you've got to get back in and comfortable after missing a couple of months. A lot of important games are ahead, and hopefully the month of September is going to agree with Michael Harris because they need to get him going. Because you have who you have at this point. Nobody's walking through that door, through the trade deadline. As it is September 1st, nobody who can affect your postseason is going to be walking through the door because the waiver deadline for any pickups you were going to make happened on August 31st, and the Braves didn't go out and find any more hitters on waivers to add to this lineup. So you need to get Michael Harris going. You need to get Jorge Soler going. And if you got Matt Olson going, and you hope to have Ozzie Albies back at some point, you could see this thing starting to come back together, especially given what Marcell Ozuna has been. I think Travis d'Arnaud has been doing a lot behind the plate. Sean Murphy has looked better lately as well. Those two guys obviously going to be splitting some time. And you've gotten some pretty good stuff out of Ramon Laureano, out of Whit Merrifield, who was having a little bit of trouble, though, after his five-hit game. 1-for-24 after getting five hits in one game. Baseball is a cruel, cruel, cruel game at times. But it got me thinking because Whit Merrifield had just moved to the leadoff spot, and this was kind of where I was going with the Jorge Soler, the recent statistics for him, and what the Braves need from a set-the-table standpoint, whether it's Michael Harris, Jorge Soler, Whit Merrifield, whoever's in those first couple of spots in the order, especially with Austin Riley out and with the fact that you don't have Ronald Acuna Jr., you just need a little bit more. Actually, you need a lot more. But what the Braves have been getting out of their leadoff hitter, I looked at the ranks for 2024. 236 average, that's 22nd in Major League Baseball. 85 runs scored, that's 13th in the game. 54 RBI is 21st at the leadoff spot. 317 on base percentage from your leadoff hitters this year, that's 20th. Their 24% strikeout rate, though, that's the third highest among leadoff hitters in baseball. That is not where you want to get higher. You want to be lower on that list, and unfortunately the Braves are not. They really miss Ronald Acuna Jr., but I would be remiss not to tell you that all of those stats I just gave you, those include the first couple of months of Ronald Acuna Jr. not really playing at the supernova level that he did a year ago. And I think this it can really be filed under the same, category that it was in 2021. There's no one player that you were going to go get that was going to replace Ronald Acuna Jr. at that time. It was the sum of the parts for the 21 Braves that made them so special. And this is a club where you can see it at times. And then there are nights where you look at it and you think, man, are they right back where they started? It's just been a frustratingly, just baffling roller coaster at times of good baseball and then not great baseball, and then lucky, and then not so lucky, and maybe that's the game. And everybody goes through it. And I've heard this phrase a lot, and I'm sure you've heard it a lot on the show because I've played a lot of the interviews and audio and times that this has come up, but every club goes through the injuries. I would throw out there that I don't know how many clubs have gone through it to the level that the Braves have when you consider the all-star team that is currently sitting on the injured list for them, but you just got to find a way through it. And even when you're going through that, there is not one other team that's going to come in and put their stuff down in the opposing clubhouse or welcome you to their ballpark that is going to feel the least bit sorry for the situation that you're going through. The job is to win baseball games. So as tiresome as it gets to hear next man up, as frustrating as it can be to realize that the guys coming in to replace the superstars aren't superstars, well, that's just kind of part and parcel to what you're dealing with. But it doesn't mean that the sum of the parts can't add up to something special, and to a team that can figure out a way to win more than lose. And I think the Braves have shown that a lot lately. Ramon Laureano, who was picked up in late May, didn't really get a lot of playing time, dealt with a little bit of injury, and when he got back, had that forgettable game against the New York Mets where I think a lot of Braves fans were ready to vote him off the island. It's a good thing they didn't, because he has been one of the more productive bats in an outfield mix that has been starving for productive bats. Whether it's losing Acuna, losing Harris, Adam Duvall's down year, Jared Kelnick's second half, which has been, you know, he's almost disappeared in a lot of ways and has become more of a platoon and sub player. But you just need some guys that could come in and give you a little something. They're going to hope Soler can do it. Ramon Laureano's been part of it. And then at third base, I mean, you're not going to walk out and find another Austin Riley out there, but perhaps Gio Urshela can do just enough, especially defensively, to hold down that position. And there's an opportunity for Austin Riley. We'll see. I mean, 6 to 8 weeks, when you've only got 6 weeks of the season left, you don't need me to tell you that that's not great math on an injury prognosis. Speaking of which, Alex Anthopoulos, after the trade deadline, when asked about Ozzie Albies getting back, had said he looks like he's healing well, healing maybe a little quicker than we anticipated, and early September could be the rehab assignment for him. Now it sounds like, as of this last road trip, that Ozzie Albies is not quite ready for that. No setbacks, but just not quite ready to go out and play those minor league rehab games. So that is not going to be starting for at least a few more days, maybe the next week, which puts Ozzie probably back in mid-September. But we'll see how all of that goes. I'll ask Justin Toscano a little bit about that as well. He's been on the road with the team on this road trip, an important one for the Braves. And we're going to keep talking about the week that was for Atlanta and, of course, what's to come and the Braves' best path to October. What does that look like? Justin Toscano of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution is going to join me next as we continue on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Port Trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
You sit in traffic now, but later, there's an ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, all your patience is paid out in gold. You remain calm through honks, bumper to bumper, and people yelling.
Come on, move!
You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
I love baseball.
Now back to more Grant McCauley and From the Diamond. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD. On Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. Right here on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. We're live from the Kia Studios on Sunday. Braves and Phillies preparing for Sunday Night Baseball. And we're going to keep our Braves conversation going as Justin Toscano of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution joins me right now on the WadeFord.com hotline. Justin, appreciate you making some time for me. It's a big road trip for the Braves and one that started off with a lot of promise. But of course, as we know, pending the outcome on Sunday, probably not exactly what the Braves were hoping for in their stop in Philadelphia.
Yeah, no, definitely. I mean, it's at this point in the season, this Braves team with where they are, like, yeah, with all the injuries, you would take a split in Philly. But given the circumstances, given that they came in five back, They really needed three or four here, and the couple losses they've had have been kind of tough.
Yeah, no, they definitely have been. And we'll touch a little bit more on the series and the way that it's played out thus far. But I guess kind of in a broad stroke sense, I mean, we've reached the final month of the season and what has felt like a bit of a blur at times. But then again, some of these days have felt very long, but we are here in September. And it's safe to say this is probably not what the Braves were expecting or where they were expecting to be when they showed up at spring training 6 months ago, is it, Justin?
No, far from it, Grant. It's funny. I feel like every time we talk for your show, it's like it's one more guy injured. Like first it was Acuna, then it was like we were talking about Michael Harris that being out too, and then Ozzie being out too, and now we're talking about Austin Riley being out too. It's weird to see the team that started the season in Philadelphia mm-hmm. and the one that came to Philadelphia this weekend and how they're so different. I mean, you've got Whit Merrifield leading off in Philly. I mean, he played for the Phillies when they were hosting right. the Braves in that season opening series, right? Like, you've got Ramon Laureano. You're going to have John Brebbia today as part of those September call-ups. You're going to, you know, you have, who am I forgetting there?
Gio,
you have Jorge Soler. Gio Urshela. You know what? It's like, as much as this rivalry is so fun and has given us a lot of instant classics over the last 2-3 years as these teams have battled it out. This Merrifield, Urshela, Laureano, no offense to them, they're playing some good ball, helping the Braves survive. It's not quite the Acuna, Riley versus Harper, you know, Turner, Stott, Realmuto, Schwarber. Like,
no,
it's not quite, you know, full strength. It looks a little different out there.
Yeah, a few different ways I could slice that up. As a wrestling fan, I could tell you that this Survivor Series match, a 5-on-5 or 9-on-9, I guess in this case, probably not one that would be promoted at the top of the card. Secondarily, and more to the point of the cinema that is a Major League Baseball season, the Braves came into the year looking like the Expendables, and now at this point of the year, they look more like the Replacements. And I mean, inside this season, there have been so many storylines, none bigger than injuries. But aside from that, we have to focus on this pitching staff, because I think that's why the Braves feel like if they can just get some things to go right, if they can just get into the postseason, which they're in line to do right now through the wild card, they've got a staff that's capable of giving them that puncher's chance. And at this point, considering everything they've been through, Justin, it's kind of a miracle in and of itself.
Man, I think it's remarkable. Like, when, you know, I'm sure it's the same way for you, but when you're on the team every day, you know, we watch these guys every day. And so it's almost like, you get lost into the, when you're experiencing it a little bit and you're seeing what they go through, you get lost in like, oh, wow, a lot of things are going wrong. Wow, the Braves are not where they expected to be. Wow, like they're not running away with the division. They've set such a high bar that this feels, it almost felt like a, you know, a down year at one point when they had a couple of those 6-game losing streaks and you're thinking, are they even going to make it? For them to be up, you know, at least 2 games over everybody else for that third wild card spot, with what they've gone through, with what they've endured, it's remarkable. And like one of those broad strokes, you know, talking about those is like, I mean, I think this is Brian Snitker's best job, or it might be. I know like 2018, he definitely deserved the manager of the year, but this has just been incredible. And within that, as you mentioned, I think the rotation is the reason why, you know, baseball fans probably shouldn't sleep on the Braves. I don't think any team in the postseason field would sleep on the Braves because when you've got Chris Sale pitching at a Cy Young level, you've got Max Fried pitching the way that he has, Ronaldo Lopez pitching the way that he has, Spencer Schwellenbach comes onto the scene, Charlie Morton is your number 5 at this point in terms of how these guys have performed lately. That's pretty good. I think if they could just get in, they're going to keep this team in pretty much every game. And who knows what happens, you know, knock on wood, because we saw the rotation kind of crumble at the end of each of the last 2 seasons, whether it was injury or fluky stuff like Max's blister or getting the flu. But, I mean, I totally agree with you. I think when you look big picture at this postseason field, I think, one, everybody's had injuries this year.
Yep.
Perhaps none worse than the Braves. But, two, I think the Braves have the best rotation of anybody. I mean, you could take Philly, but man, it just seems like the Braves have had the numbers of Christopher Sanchez and Ranger Suarez this year. And who knows what Aaron Nola is going to do, although he's a very good postseason pitcher. You've got Zach Wheeler, but I just think, man, like when I look at this thing, the Phillies haven't really gotten after any of the Braves' starters this year. Like I think Atlanta's going to have the best rotation going into this thing.
Yeah, and if that is the case, I mean, that would be a major leg up on a lot of clubs that have had a lot of questions to answer, injury or performance related, with their starting rotations. There will obviously be some teams, as you get down to the playoff field, that are going to have some of those top starters the Braves will have to face, but you at least have yourself lined up to be able to counter that, and I think the Braves are definitely in that position. Chatting with Justin Toscano of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, he joins me right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game on the WadeFord.com hotline. We touched on it briefly, but let's kind of get into it. This weekend was something I feel like in a lot of ways was Atlanta's last stand or last best chance when it comes to winning the division. They needed to take the series against the Phillies to really have the door open for this final month if they had any eyes on, I think, taking the division away from them. But like a lot of things for the 2024 Braves, it kind of didn't go according to plan. A winnable game that got away from them in the opener. And I'll also kind of track back to something you mentioned a moment ago. Those 6-game losing streaks for the Braves in the second half, the Phillies have been about a .500 club here in the second half. If the Braves had just figured out a way to just split those six games, just go 3-3 and avoid those long losing streaks, this series would have been even crazier because it would have been a dead heat for the division. But as we know, this is not a what-if kind of universe, but as it was and as it is, this was kind of, I do feel like, to make a long story as short as I can at this point, it was kind of that last stand for this Braves club. So you kind of feel the same way?
I do. I mean, you know how this thing goes. 1 month is a lot of time, but when you really look at it, when the Braves get back home, they're going to have, what, 25 games, 26 games? I'm trying to do the math in my head right now. That's not a ton of time. Obviously, people who have been watching this game for a long time remember the 7.5 up with 17 to go Mets-Phillies race, where the Phillies came back there and staged that comeback. I just don't see that happening. I mean, the Phillies played the Marlins in September. It's not like they've got this world-beating schedule. I think they opened the door for the Braves in the summer, and that was kind of your shot, right? And the Braves didn't take advantage of it. Like, to your point, I remember crunching the numbers. So, like, right when the Braves finished that Angel Stadium series, I was doing the numbers, and it was like since the start of June, the Braves and the Phillies had lost on the same day like 31 times. Or the Phillies had lost 33 times since then, but I did 31 because the Braves took two or three from one time. But they'd lost 31 times since like the start of June, and the Braves had also lost in like 13 of those days. Like, there's just been a ton of games left on the table.
Yeah.
Whereas you felt like in 22, like even talking to, you know, guys in New York or whatever, like it just felt like the Braves were winning every day the Mets lost, and the Mets were losing every day the Braves lost. And it just kind of, this summer it was kind of flipped. So I agree with you in the sense that, look, like, I just think, you know, because they didn't take three or four, it's going to be an uphill climb. And really, I'm not – I think you should just focus on playing the best baseball because I'm not sure you should just burn it out to win the division. Yeah. Like, at this point, just make the postseason.
Yeah, and Brian Snitker's been saying is every game's important, every series is important. Even coming into this Phillies series, I know he was telling you guys, look, I don't look at any series as being more important than the others. We got to win them all right now. And I would say that the last couple of weeks have been full of more of the kind of games and indicators that this is a team that can consistently win series, and that's not a small development, especially when you look at the fact the wild card is there for the Braves right now. I think September does have all of the makings of a very intriguing race. Padres and Diamondbacks only a couple of games in front of Atlanta right now as they've kind of slid back toward the pack. Mets a couple of games back of the Braves for the final spot. And the Cubs, all of a sudden, are making themselves a little push with about, what, 25 or so games to play. So I guess I say all that to say, what's your read on these five teams in the wild card as they come down to the wire?
Wow. I mean, as I look at this right now, I was seeing that right before we talked to see where Chicago was. As I look at this right now, it's going to be a tough climb for the Cubs. I'm not sure that they do that they have enough time in September to get this done. The Mets could do it, but here's why I would feel good if I were a Braves fan, is because I checked the other day. The Mets have – I mean, I'll just read the schedule right now. It's pretty crazy. So after this White Sox series, they go home for three against Boston, not a bad team. They're at home for three against the Reds. You know, not great, but the run differential, you know, stands out as maybe they've gotten unlucky. They go to Toronto for three and the Phillies for three. So they play the Phillies for – they've got seven games against the Phillies in September, three more games in Atlanta, and then three more in Milwaukee after that. Their last week is three in Atlanta and three in Milwaukee. And, Grant, like, I've just seen enough from the Mets over the years to know to think that I don't think they've got it in them. Like, I think they're going to slide back. And you know what? I think the Padres and the Diamondbacks have been playing so well – that really, I think that's the competition right there is the Padres, Diamondbacks, and the Braves. I think those are the contenders. And I tend to think, you know, the Cubs and the Mets, like I give the Mets credit for the roster they had this year and doing what they've done and getting hot. But I just think the rest of that pack are, you know, pretenders. If you're a Braves fan, I'd be feeling pretty good right now based on who everybody else has in September. And I think the Padres and Diamondbacks are going to play well enough down the stretch to keep two of those spots. I don't know how they'll be ordered. And you know what? I think the Braves, now that you've got guys going every fifth day, starters, they're getting – I mean, they've had, as we talk right now, Grant, 20 straight starts of three or fewer runs, which is like the most in franchise history in the modern era. And so, I just think this Braves team has enough. They've been there before. And I think the competition is more with the Padres and Diamondbacks – and less with you know, the Mets and Cubs and everybody else. But that could change, you know, with the next show you do, because maybe the Mets beat the White Sox today and the Braves lose and the Mets are one back.
Yeah, you just never know how it's going to play. And there is enough baseball left. We're not talking about a lot, but enough to allow for some crazy things to happen in this final month. Wrapping up here with Justin Toscano of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Couple of quick questions for you. Latest on Ozzie Albies, there was a lot of talk, including from Alex Anthopoulos, about perhaps having a timetable of early September to get out on a rehab assignment. Doesn't sound like that's still in place, though, does it?
No, I mean, no, because he was on a trip, that last road trip, and I guess that was probably more because he'd never been to Angel Stadium, and obviously Ron Washington's there.
Yeah.
But Brian Snicker was asked a couple days ago here in Philly about if Ozzie Albies is, you know, not being on this road trip means he's nearing a rehab assignment, and Snit said, no, you know, he's not really there yet. So he's doing some light baseball activities, apparently lightly hitting off a tee. So that's something. But he's obviously going to need to be swinging full bore and full go and everything before he heads on the rehab assignment. So it still seems like, I mean, in terms of the timeline, it still seems like the middle of September, you know, for a Braves return seems possible.
Yeah. And since it is September, let's close out with this. We have to at least touch on the fact there are expanded rosters. Only two players these days, though, which is kind of unfortunate in some ways, especially for a club like the Braves that probably would love to have the ability to activate its entire 40-man in some way, shape, or form and have some quantity and quality to cover these things. But that's not the case. Reliever John Brebbia and outfielder Eli White, first two men up. But I'd imagine there's a few other names and faces we'll see over the next 4 weeks.
Yeah, totally. So those are the first two men up. Eli White's not a surprise because Snit had said the other day they'd look for somebody with versatility and speed. He fits that description. That's why I wasn't surprised to see Yuli Gurriel traded to the Royals. Mm-hmm. He should have a shot there immediately with Vinny Pasquantino breaking his thumb and being out 6 to 8 weeks. John Brebbia was a little bit of a surprise because it hadn't shown up on the transactions log quite yet when they announced the move. So, yeah, they brought him in. It was officially a minor league deal, and then they had to bring him up. DFA'd Zach Logue. They like the track record there, that he's another kind of proven guy, just like Merrifield and Laureano, another proven guy who got a good deal over the offseason. The White Sox, for what it's worth, valued him at $5.5 million. So that's what he signed for there. They are paying all of that, of course, because they released him. So the Braves are only paying him that $740,000 minimum, a prorated version of it for however long he is in the big leagues with them. But, yeah, I mean, I think he's got, you know, solid stuff, good swing and miss, and he's the first one out. And it'll also help them kind of keep their depth and have Deisbel Hernandez waiting in the wings whenever they need him.
Yeah, good to have depth, and certainly good to have quality depth at that. And why not take a flyer on a veteran reliever who has had some success, though it doesn't feel like too many folks in Chicago, at least on the South Side, have had a whole lot of success this baseball season. Justin, appreciate all your time. As always, look forward to catching up with you when the team returns home this week. But as I won't see you before then, enjoy the off day on Monday, your Labor Day, a long weekend where at least it looks like you get a day off, does it not?
Wow. Yeah, no, I definitely do. And you know how it is, man. If you cover the Braves, do you ever get any of these holidays off? I was surprised they weren't playing on Labor Day.
Yeah. No, it may be the biggest surprise of the show. Maybe I should have opened with that and figured out what conspiracy theory it owes to. But Justin, I appreciate your time as always. Look forward to catching you again soon.
Of course, Grant. Thanks, man.
Coming up next, we take our trip around the big leagues here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Back to more From the Diamond. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get two windows free with every two you buy and pay nothing for 2 years. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
This is From the Diamond on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Grant McCauley with you from the Kia Studios here in Midtown. We embark on hour number two of the show. We begin our trip around the big leagues, as it were, for some stories that caught my attention in the week that was. I always like to see what else is going on across baseball, especially when we arrive at this kind of pivotal time of the year. Now, I'm not going to go through all the standings and give you what everybody is up to the minute on a Sunday, because as we know, a lot of things are going to be changing over the next 4 weeks. Let me just suffice all of that to say I'm looking forward to the finish of this season. The Braves are going to try to secure their spot in October. That is just one of many stories across the world of baseball. In just a few minutes, We're going to hear from Jalen Thompson, a buddy of mine who covers the Royals for the Kansas City Star, one of the great surprise teams of 2024. And I'll have Jalen jump on the show to talk a little bit more about that. But a couple of different stories that kind of intersected. And it takes us all the way back to the free agent odyssey that the Boris clients were on this past winter. And, of course, those Boris clients, free agents, looking for the, I guess, greatest agent in the history of sports to get them their big payday with a new Major League Baseball team. Of course, Scott Boras has earned a reputation for getting his clients some very big contracts. And that is not anything you're ever going to hear me complain about, because I believe the players are the product and they should get paid and they only have so many years to earn their money. And that's pretty much how I feel about it. So we'll throw all that out there. But it does bring up a lot of other feelings when it comes to the super agent and your team maybe getting priced out of being able to sign such players. And I can understand that. There's a flip side of the coin. It's negotiations, but ultimately, you know, these are players who put their careers in the hands of the agents to help steer that path and secure the bag, as the old saying goes. Well, Jordan Montgomery, who is now of the Arizona Diamondbacks, had some interesting comments this past week. He, of course, was part of the World Series winning Texas Rangers and looked like he was going to, I thought, get a nice big payday with somebody. 4, 5, 6 years, who knew what it was going to be for the lefty who had just had an incredible postseason run and helped his club win the World Series. The Athletic posted this article a bit earlier, and even they had them projected, Montgomery projected for a 5-year, $105 million contract. That was what somebody was going to give him based on their guesses in the market and what have you. Well, obviously that didn't happen, and now some months later, 6 months later, Montgomery is a little bit hot about who's to blame for this. And apparently that's his former agent, Scott Boras, as they parted ways when he had to settle for that 1-year contract with the Diamondbacks, and it has been a very bad year on the mound because it took Montgomery so long into spring training to finally sign that he was behind and just never really able to ramp up for the season, and the whole thing kind of snowballed on him. And that's all part of the equation here. The quote, though, that caught the attention of me and the attention of another Boras client, who I'll get to in a moment, was that obviously Boras kind of butchered it. So I'm just trying to move on from the offseason and try to forget it. That is what Jordan Montgomery told the Boston Herald. It's pretty blunt, and I don't think that any part of that should be surprising based on his experience. Earlier this year, he decided to part ways with Scott Boras and hire a new agent after signing with the Arizona Diamondbacks. And that was less than a month after that. It was a 1-year, $25 million deal, so not a bad contract. And we've seen a lot of different players have to kind of take that 1-year pillow and then try to springboard that into a bigger, longer-term deal later. So it all makes sense. It's not outside of the realm of possibility. And he wasn't the only guy that was having to settle for less years than he wanted to, even if he got a nice average value or annual value for it. But Blake Snell, who, of course, won the Cy Young last year for the Padres, signed very late with the Giants, got a multi-year deal out of it, but not the long-term big deal that you might have expected. But he is not laying any of the blame on Scott Boras. This also, according to The Athletic. And Snell actually said he was bothered by the comments from Montgomery, in which the lefty said that Boras butchered his free agent negotiations, and Montgomery fired Boras and moved on to Wasserman. That's who he brought on as his agency. Snell said that Scott Boras is going to be conducting my free agency this offseason. If it's going to happen, it's widely anticipated he will opt out of the rest of his contract with the Giants. But this is what Snell had to say about it. My experience with Scott Boras has been great. That seems like the polar opposite. He told me everything that was happening, all the offers I got, so for him to just get bashed for what I believe is false, that's not fair at all, and I really strongly believe that. Now, while Blake Snell, who got hurt and had a very slow start to the season as well, has pitched like a Cy Young winner in the second half, including a no-hitter not long ago, and Jordan Montgomery with a 6.44 ERA and 18 starts for the Diamondbacks has been moved out of their rotation and bumped into the bullpen. But Blake Snell is just not willing to put all of that onto the shoulders of Scott Boras, because it can be pretty difficult to find the club and the right deal. And if you can leverage that 1-year contract or the multi-year deal with the opt-outs, it has worked to get a bigger deal. So I guess this is all one big exercise in trust the process when it comes to that. So we'll see how it all plays out for all the men involved, but it has definitely been a lost season for Montgomery. Speaking of some money, and this one I did not know. And this one I think is probably one that you can look at, and a lot of people are going to be learning something along with me. Major League Baseball blocked Twins pitcher Joe Ryan from giving his number 41 jersey number to Carlos Santana when he signed with the Twins. He wasn't even going to charge Santana for it. He was just going to say, hey, you're the veteran. You've been wearing this throughout the course of your career. Why don't you have number 41? Santana's been wearing this for the majority of his 14-year career. He signed with the Twins a month ago, and he wanted to continue to wear it. And he had that deal all worked out. But a new Major League Baseball rule from the most recent collective bargaining agreement would have required a $225,000 charge to Santana to secure that number. So exceptions can be made for veterans who change teams. So it can happen. But since Ryan is a very popular player for the Twins, there are a lot of jerseys and souvenirs that have his name and number 41 on them already. So MLB wanted Santana to buy out the inventory to find his new number. Now, if that sounds familiar, which it didn't to me, but I didn't know that this had happened, Santana said, that's fine. You know, I can deal with it. But the NFL also does this, especially when they had defensive players and skill positions finally begin using single numbers. And in 2021, Dalvin Cook of the Minnesota Vikings switched from number 33 to number 4 with the advent of that rule. But he waited for an entire season because the NFL wanted him to buy out $1.2 million in inventory of the previous owner of that number. He said, I've been trying to do it last year, did Dalvin Cook, but they tried to take my money from me, and that's important nowadays. I had never heard of anything quite like that. Meanwhile, a few other interesting stories here, some odds and ends, if you will. This weekend, for the first time since 1964, when they won the World Series against them, the Cardinals beat the Yankees in New York. It had only been 60 years. Clearly, they had not met in a World Series for quite some time in an interleague play. The Cardinals had not found a way to win in New York. My friends over at Foul Territory posted a list of what things were costing, the cost of living 60 years ago, when the Cardinals last beat the Yankees in the Bronx. I wanted to pull a few of these because I thought they were pretty good. Price of a new home on average, $13,000 and change. Average income, just over $6,000 per year. A new car would cost you just under $3,500 a year. Average rent was $115 a month. Tuition to Harvard was $1,500 per year. Things have gotten a little expensive when it comes to the college experience. Movie ticket was $1.25, gasoline 29 cents per gallon. Postage stamp was 5 cents. You could get 10 pounds of sugar for 90 cents if you need that much sugar, which I think since 1964 we've learned we probably don't need 10 pounds of sugar at any given time. Milk was just over $1 per gallon. Bacon, 69 cents per pound. Eggs, 54 cents per dozen. You get the idea. Anyway, I don't think any of us have seen those prices. Even if we shop at the most bargain of bargain grocery outlets, it would be very nice. But that was what things were costing the last time the Cardinals beat the Yankees in New York. Something that happened this weekend. Something else that happened was September call-ups. And for certain teams, it's just adding that veteran, that extra piece to the bullpen or that extra guy on the bench. But a lot of times, and what this was before it was whittled down to just the two players now, is you can bring up some of your young players and your top prospects and maybe give them a taste of the big leagues to have them ready for that next year. That all kind of went away with the collective bargaining because teams weren't enjoying the fact that a club could have a 20-man bullpen, basically, and throw a whole bunch of arms. And obviously we know some of those things have changed, maybe for the better, over the past few years. But Darren Baker was brought up in big league stadiums. That's how he grew up, because he's the son of Dusty Baker, longtime manager who just retired this past year. But for the first time on Sunday, he was at a major league stadium as a Major League Baseball player. 25 years old, one of the Nationals' September call-ups after batting .285 and stealing 38 bases in 112 games at AAA this season. Darren Baker said, I had it run through my head as a kid as to what it would be like, and it's pretty close. I was kind of shocked, but then I settled in, and I feel like I'm along. I'm very happy. Obviously, Darren went to many of those parks, as his father was a major league manager for decades and obviously played prior to that. But the Bakers, Dusty Baker and his family, arrived in Washington, D.C. around 3:30 in the morning on Sunday, so they'd be in for the 1:35 matinee at Nationals Park. And Darren pinch hit in the ninth inning and did not take long to get his first career hit. It came as a single in his very first at-bat. So congratulations to Darren Baker, who a lot of us may remember from the 2002 World Series, when serving as the littlest, cutest bat boy you can imagine, wandered a bit too close to home plate as Kenny Lofton was busy knocking in some runs. And JT Snow, I'll never forget it, and a lot of baseball fans probably won't, and you can find the video out there, JT Snow simultaneously crossed home plate and scooped up Darren Baker on his way through to make sure that he was not in the middle of a potential home plate collision of any sorts. Because at that age, at any age now, Major League Baseball frowns on home plate collisions. That would have been an absolute disaster. But pretty cool for Darren Baker now, 25 years old, getting his first Major League hit in his first big league at bat as a September call-up for the Washington Nationals. Brewers slugger, accomplishing a feat not seen since 2000 when Sammy Sosa did it. And actually, the couple of names on this list are pretty impressive. But Willie Adames has joined a small and somewhat quirky club. In the top of the third inning on Saturday against the Reds, he clubbed a three-run homer off Buck Farmer. It put the Milwaukee Brewers out to a 3-0 lead. It was his 27th home run of the season. That certainly isn't a particular record of any note. Just four away from his career high, though, but it's also great. But he's developed quite a penchant, apparently, for hitting three-run homers and now has 12 of those this year, more than anyone in baseball. And according to MLB.com, Ken Griffey Jr. has hit more three-run homers in a single season with 13. He's the only guy with more three-run homers in a single season than Willie Adames of the Milwaukee Brewers. With a month to play, by the way, Griffey hit 13 three-run homers in 1996. No big league hitter has had 12 three-run homers in a season since Sammy Sosa in 2000. Adames also has more three-run homers than four teams this season: the Pirates, the Rays, the Cardinals, and the White Sox. Pretty impressive to make your 27 home runs go that far on the season. Those are a few things happening around the big leagues. When we come back, we will turn our attention to one of the more surprising teams looking for a spot in October for the first time in about a decade. It's the Kansas City Royals. Jalen Thompson's going to join me next right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Now, more From the Diamond with Grant McCauley. Brought to you by Mark Spain Real Estate. Get a guaranteed offer from Mark Spain Real Estate. 855-299-SOLD on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back into From the Diamond with Grant McCauley here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Live from the Kia Studios on a Sunday. We're wrapping up the weekend. We're taking our trip around the big leagues. We'll get back to our Braves talk, of course, here shortly as they get set for the Sunday night game against the Philadelphia Phillies. But I wanted to take a look at a club that I think has opened a lot of eyes this year, and they play in the American League Central. I speak, of course, of the Kansas City Royals, a club that is knocking on the door of the postseason for the first time in nearly a decade. To help me talk all about that, I've got my friend Jalen Thompson, who covers the Royals for the Kansas City Star, and it is a good year to cover the Royals, is it not, Jalen?
Yes, it's a good year, night and day from last year.
Yeah, it's wild how that works in baseball, and the Royals have certainly been, I think, one of baseball's great surprise teams here in 2024, a team with some young talent, and one that includes the emerging superstar, I think, in the American League, in Bobby Witt Jr., but is it safe to say that the Royals have surpassed the expectations they set out with in spring training, Jalen?
And if you ask anyone outside of the Royals organization, you're talking about a team that won 56 games last year. So that means they lost 106.
Uh-huh.
No one thought that they would be where they are today, looking at 75 wins and trying to make a playoff push. It's just something that you don't really see a lot in baseball, a team that makes a huge jump like that. Like you said, Bobby Witt Jr. is a guy that has really emerged. You've seen him at the Home Run Derby. You've seen him in the All-Star Game. Mm-hmm. He's someone that's taken that mantle as the star of the team, and he's really thrived in it. And really, it's just the influx of veterans that they signed throughout the offseason, who they acquired right before the September deadline for waiver claims. They're building a team that's veteran-laden and also around a young core, and that's why you're seeing the success that you're seeing now.
Yeah, it's a little bit of everything. I mean, having a young superstar to build the team around, that's certainly a good building block to have. We've heard about Bobby Witt really since the day he was drafted, his quick trek through the minor leagues, and obviously what he's done his first couple of years. But taking it to the next level this year, and I do want to get back to him, but I'm glad you brought it up, because I do feel like we have to track back to the winter, where we saw Kansas City actively pursuing some veterans to help fortify the roster. They added to the rotation with Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, along with the 2023 acquisition of Cole Reagans. That can't be understated either, and a homegrown arm in Brady Singer, which has given KC, I think, one of the best rotations they've had, obviously, in quite some time, one of the better and more well-rounded rotations in baseball. Bullpen mm-hmm. can always be a moving target for a pitching staff, but just how much stability has that rotation given the Royals all season?
It's been a huge boost to the stability of that starting rotation. When you look at last year, you had guys that were pretty much performing in roles that maybe they weren't accustomed to performing in, but that's what they had at the major league level. You look at Cole Riggins. You mentioned him. He's a midseason acquisition last year. They got him from the Texas Rangers for a role as Chapman. He comes in. This is a guy that really needed to work on throwing a slider. I mean, it's something that he didn't really have. So he goes in AAA when he comes over. He works on that. He adds it to his game. And now it's a vital pitch for him this year. And it was a vital pitch from last year as well. Brady Singer was a guy that was a number two kind of guy, a frontline guy. And you saw he got hit around last year. But with the influx of, like you said, Seth Lugo and Michael Wacha, those guys coming in really have helped him develop, helped him kind of grow. If you watch the Royals after every start, they have an in-game huddle in the bullpen, all the starters. They talk about what went wrong, what went right, how can they get better. They watch the bullpen together before the game. So I think just that veteran know-how, Seth Lugo, who's been around the block, Michael Wacha, who's been around the block, both of those guys coming together has really made this rotation blossom.
Yeah, and those little things and the details and how much attention you pay to those can take your game to that next level, and veterans obviously can help you do that. I can't help but wonder when they signed these guys initially that, A, it could do a lot of what you just talked about, but, B, should the Royals be in a position where, hey, maybe they fall out of it? They have signed a couple of really valuable trade chips that they could move, but fortunately for this conversation and for what's going on in Kansas City there, they haven't had to worry about offloading those veterans. They're a big part of their success. Chatting with Jalen Thompson, he covers the Royals for the Kansas City Star. He joins me here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game via the WadeFord.com hotline. Over on the offensive side, let's go ahead and talk about it, because it all starts with Bobby Witt Jr. He's established himself as an absolute superstar in his age 24 season. Take me inside the elevation of his game this year, though, because he'd already shown all the tools his first couple of years in the big leagues. But, Jalen, I don't need to tell you, you watch this guy every day. This is the next level.
Yeah, it's impressive to see. For Bobby Witt Jr., it really all started with him just being able to understand, this is how pitchers are going to pitch me, and I'm going to take what you give me. And that's kind of where the genesis of it has happened for him. If you look at last year, he was getting beat up top with the fastball. Like, pitcher would throw it up high, and he would chase, and he would often either swing and miss, or he'll be late a little bit. He's corrected that. He has really blossomed in that number two hole in the lineup. They tried him at leadoff, and it just wasn't something that he felt comfortable with. So they put him at number two, and he's been just thriving. He's batting in front of Vinny Pasquantino before he went down with a right thumb injury, and Salvador Perez is also there to give him some protection. But for Bobby, it's just a matter of tapping more into his power, his 5-2 abilities, and you're seeing he's hitting over 340, which is really impressive this time of the year.
Yeah, and Bobby Witt Jr. has got some ridiculous numbers this year from the power-speed combo, run production. It's easy to say, and it's a pretty obvious statement, Bobby Witt Jr. should be the MVP most years in the American League, and I think he has an incredibly strong case, but he's also got some strong competition in the form of Aaron Judge in particular, who's once again leading the world in homers and having a career-type season. The events of this final month can obviously be a tipping point for either of those guys, but Jalen, I would not be surprised to see Bobby Witt take the MVP, even with Judge's home run exploits this year, would you?
I think that he certainly has a good chance at getting that MVP. It's going to depend on the last month that he puts together with the Royals and how far the Royals go, and they can potentially maybe win the American League Central Divisional Crown. Like I said, Aaron Judge is a home run and RBIs, and he brings the excitement. So it really is going to depend on what kind of flavor of baseball do you like. Do you like a player that is the homers and really brings the pizzazz and the excitement, or do you like a player that is getting the hits and has the defense and leads the league in WAR and doing those type of things that Bobby is doing? So it's just a matter of what's your flavor. Both guys are incredibly talented. Both guys are certainly deserving of the MVP. And if Bobby doesn't win it this year, I believe it will be a close vote, and he's going to get a lot of love from the voters for sure.
Yeah, I think he's going to have some opportunities in his future as well to be in that discussion for quite some time. And when you are being discussed amongst the likes of Aaron Judge and guys who have won this award before as one of the best players in baseball, you have certainly arrived at that head table, if you will. You brought up Salvador Perez earlier, the veterans having another big year at the plate. He's quietly put together a career that is better than I think than most people realize, and maybe even some Hall of Fame talk around it when he decides to hang him up, because the offensive numbers, the gold gloves, all the things he's done in the catcher position. But putting all that aside, Perez is kind of that last big piece from the Royals' run of success a decade ago. What role does he play on this up-and-coming club?
He's the heart and soul of the team. And you can ask anyone in that clubhouse, and they will quickly tell you they want to make the postseason for Salvador Perez because it means so much to him to get back to that postseason where, like you mentioned, in 2014 and 2015, he was the young guy that was, you know, there learning from the vets and being a part of it all. Now they have seen him go through the ups and downs of how it is in a career where the Royals have been down for so long. They haven't made the postseason since 2015. They haven't had a winning record since that same point in time. Now they're potentially going to have the chance to have that winning record, potentially make the postseason. And Salvador Perez, out of everyone, knows that when you can get in the postseason, when you can experience the Kauffman Stadium, the electricity that stadium will provide, mm-hmm. what the playoffs provide, anything can happen. And it's magical. And Salvi wants to taste that again because he said it himself. Once you taste the postseason, you don't want to play the regular season anymore. You want to get back to the playoffs because it's that special. And everyone is pushing for him to get that. Like I said, he's the heart and soul of the team. He makes the team go. He stands up for what Kansas City believes in. It's the ethos of the organization. And really, the Royals wouldn't be where they are without Salvador Perez, and they want to help show that appreciation with getting him back to the playoffs.
Well, winning cures all, I would say. When you have to wander kind of the way that he has, it can be quite a long journey, but the end of that journey and getting back there, which the Royals have a very real chance of doing this year, would be a pretty sweet story for Salvador Perez, not to mention everyone else on this club. Now, Kansas City suffered a setback recently. You brought up Vinny Pasquantino, broken thumb, likely a season-ending injury. 6 to 8 weeks was the reports by you and others. The Royals are expecting him to miss. Obviously, you do the math in late August, early September. 6 to 8 weeks, not a great prognosis. How are the Royals going to combat the loss of one of their big sluggers?
Yeah, it's tough to see Vinny Pasquantino go down. You know, he's someone that came on. This is like his best year, a career year for him. It was approaching 100 RBIs, and that was something that really meant a lot to him, and he'll fall just short of that. But the Royals have decided that they want to keep the momentum going, so they brought in veterans. They brought in, yesterday, they brought in Tommy Pham, Robbie Grossman, and Yuli Gurriel, who you guys are familiar with. He was with the Braves AAA affiliate in Gwinnett. They're going to be a big part of this team down the stretch. They are veterans that know how to make a postseason push. Gurriel is going to be in the line today as alongside Tommy Pham against the Houston Astros. And those guys are just going to be here to just fuel what the Royals already have. I don't expect Gurriel to play first base every day, but he'll be in the rotation. Salvador Perez will be at first base a lot more. And you'll see Tommy Pham in the outfield rotation as well. Same with Robbie Grossman. These guys are just there to help stabilize what Vinny has lost by him going out with the injury, and just try to continue to push the team forward.
Sometimes for a player like that, it's going to take quite a few pieces to be able to account for that loss in production. And maybe you can't make it up, but you do like to have, as we talked about earlier, these veteran guys that have proven it before come in and at least help stabilize it, because I don't think anything sends a better message to a club when it goes through a loss or when it maybe feels like it's, you know, struggling to figure something out or get over a hump, than the front office going out and saying, hey, we got you some help. Here it is. And these guys walk through the door just before the deadline for waiver pickups at the end of the month of August. I want to flash back to the trade deadline. The Royals made a few moves there, looking to fortify a little bit in that bullpen. Do you feel like they did enough there to get that group where it needs to be as we head down the stretch? And, of course, for big innings, they could be throwing in the month of October.
Yeah, I think the Royals' biggest goal this trade deadline was to get another fireballer. Someone that can pitch in high leverage, someone that can go in and, you know, get outs when you need it. And a person that has done that is Lucas Irsay. He's come over from the Oakland Athletics, and he has been lights out to really take that closer role that was kind of open. And he has a great mix of pitches. The fastball we know is electric, but just his ability to just stabilize the bullpen on the back end, that has opened up a lot for just the Royals to be able to mix and match to get to him in that ninth inning. And sometimes he doesn't even come in the ninth inning. If the high leverage is in the seventh inning, he'll be out there. If it's the eighth inning, he'll go one plus. And I think that's just very valuable to have, having someone like that to really step up and step in and really nail that down. And additionally, the Royals also took two of their starters from last year. Daniel Lynch, he started a handful of games last year. He's in the bullpen now as a left-handed arm. Chris Bubich, he missed all of last year with Tommy John surgery after getting hurt in early April, but he's back now. He's in the bullpen. So they're finding ways to use their young guys while they're starting the rotation is already full, and it's paying big dividends. And you talk about a guy like Sam Long. Sam Long's another guy. All these guys are impactful. John Schreiber, because of what they got in Lucas Irsay, that you can move them down a little bit in the at the back end of the bullpen, and now it's kind of like a pecking order has been established.
Yeah, and good to have layers of depth, and again, add to that as you go along, because as you just pointed out, the leverage outs don't just come in the ninth inning. They can come at a number of different times in the game, so good to have somebody that can step in that role when it is needed. Let's wrap up with this, Jalen. The AL Central, a very interesting race thus far. The Cleveland Guardians have been at or near the top most of the season. Royals and Twins making this a three-team race with a month to go. What's your read on this division, and what do you think could give the Royals the edge to be the last team standing?
It's funny because earlier this year, no one thought that the AL Central would even have maybe a team be at over 500 or potentially like where they are now, where three are competing for the Central Division crown. You look at the Cleveland Guardians, they have been really great this year. They have Jose Ramirez, they have Josh Naylor, they have Stephen Kwan, great pitching staff, great bullpen, and they've been out front the entire year. The Minnesota Twins have also have a great pitching staff, and their team is just very just solid cohesively, and they have been, remained in it. And then you have the Royals, too, right there in the middle as the in second place. And we talked about what the Kansas City has done to really put themselves in a great position. It's going to come down to the wire. The Royals have three games against the Cleveland Guardians this upcoming week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. They have a weekend series against the Minnesota Twins Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Those six games are important. It's going to reshape probably the AL Central as we know it. It's going to be important for whoever comes out of those six games. In Kansas City's, at least for them, they have to win those because that will allow them to have the opportunity to take that divisional crown. But we can't also forget about, there's also another way to get in. It's the AL wild card. Mm-hmm. So even if the Central is not to be for the Royals, they are still in good position in the AL wild card to make a playoff berth. But winning that Central and getting that bye is crucial because, as we've seen, you know, you can set your lineup, you can get things in order, you get guys rest, and that might be important. And also, they have home games at Kauffman Stadium, which is also a big advantage.
Yeah, a lot of different things can go into that. We're still kind of, I think, learning as we go about MLB's updated or revamped postseason format, but whatever the case for the Kansas City Royals, the object of the game is to get there, and they got a really good chance of doing that this year. Jalen, I appreciate all of your time joining me to go over what's going on with the Kansas City Royals, one of the most exciting teams in baseball here in 2024. Good luck down the stretch. I hope you have a great team to cover, and look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you so much, Grant. Love the show, and I'm super excited to be on it. Can't wait to come on again.
He's Jalen Thompson of the Kansas City Star with a look at the Royals here on with a special look at the Royals on our trip around the big leagues. When we come back, we'll turn our focus back to the Atlanta Braves, who wrap up their business with the Philadelphia Phillies this weekend. And, of course, we'll look ahead to the week to come. That's all next right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Talking Braves and beyond.
Baseball!
With From the Diamond. From the Diamond is brought to you by Window Nation. Get two windows free with every two you buy and pay nothing for 2 years. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Welcome back in to From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. We're live from the Kia Studios on Sunday, wrapping things up and getting you set for some Sunday night baseball as the Braves and Phillies will conclude their series. And then Atlanta will come on home for an off day on Monday, or Labor Day, which, as we talked about a little bit earlier, had Justin Toscano on the show a lot. Had the Braves not playing on a holiday. They usually like to get those, I guess we call them the wrestling business, they like to get that gate there on that day. But not happening. They will get back in action against the Colorado Rockies in the first of three on Tuesday. Then the Toronto Blue Jays are going to come to town. So a Rockies club the Braves should be very familiar with. They don't have to do it in Coors Field this time. A series they very much need to win to get right back about their winning ways as far as series are concerned, because they could not do that in Philadelphia against the Phillies. And that game one kind of looms large at this point. Braves jumped out to that early lead, couldn't hold on to that one, took the second game, dropped the third game, and then come into Sunday looking for no less than a split against the Phillies, with the National League East becoming a steeper and steeper hill for the Braves to climb, most certainly. We talked about that a lot earlier and throughout the show. And we have seen a couple of games in the past week, I think, that have gotten away from the Braves. One against the Nationals on that Sunday right before the road trip. And look, they bounced right back and swept the Minnesota Twins. But I think every game at this point, not that all 162 don't count the same, because yes, they do. But when you get here and the opportunities are fewer and you're in crunch time and you just need to be able to convert as many wins as you can, turn as many leads into wins and not let them slip away, it's going to feel a little bit different in late August and through September. And obviously, nowhere do they feel any worse when you let a lead slip away than in October. So the Braves will certainly hope to not have that happen. But this does happen to clubs throughout the course of a season. And the bad game one against the Phillies was unfortunate. Atlanta had also kind of emptied out its bullpen in Minnesota to sweep that series and had used some of their higher leverage arms quite a bit. And part of that had to do with not getting quite as much length out of the starters as they would have liked to. It could have been a real disaster, because you remember that game one, Max Fried had only thrown one inning against the Twins before it went into a basically 90-minute rain delay. He came out and was able to get through five. I really wonder what the Braves pen would have looked like if he had only gotten the one inning out of Max Fried. He hadn't been able to come back out and do that. And then we saw Fried. He was really, I mean, no worse for the wear this last time out against the Phillies on Saturday. Seven innings of three-run ball. If you ask me, I'm going to sign up for that most nights, because I think that gives you a chance to win a baseball game. Just a tough one as the Braves ran into Zach Wheeler in that one. But as far as some of these games that have turned into, you know, whether they're a tie, whether the Braves are up, margin of error in some cases is pretty thin based on what the offense goes through on a given day or given series. But managing this bullpen is, I think, going to be one of the toughest tasks for Brian Snitker down the stretch. And it's the one that, look, everybody is going to be able to, in hindsight or from their armchair, make the right decision based on what happens or what doesn't happen, or what you hoped wouldn't have happened if you'd done a different move a different way. That just, that goes with the territory. You know, he doesn't have the opportunity to manage it in hindsight, but there are going to be tactical times, which, look, I can tell you, no surprise about game one against the Phillies. I understand why Charlie Morton was still in there, but if it were my choice, I think you had Aaron Bummer up for a reason. I give him that lefty-lefty matchup and let the chips fall where they may. He could have come in and not won that matchup either. We'll never know, but what we do know is a three-run homer by Brandon Marsh, which had a .240 expected batting average, so make that make sense, leaves the ballpark, because I think it just kind of got up in the jet stream and snuck over the wall. Michael Harris hits an absolute rocket a few innings later with a .740 expected batting average and is a nice line drive out to the center fielder. And sometimes that's just baseball. You know, sometimes you hit it hard, you get nothing for it. You hit it in the right spot at the right time on the right pitch, and you're rewarded. And I think that was just kind of how it was. But there are going to be some of those what-ifs, and they're going to loom a lot larger. And I think Brian Snitker talked about it after the game, saying, look, they're all going to hurt. Any game that we don't win. He did like the matchup with Charlie Morton based on the fact he had punched out Brandon Marsh a couple of times and had the curveball. But you start to look at some of the other factors that were in there. Over 100 pitches, laboring, couple of runners on base. You just don't want to give them any life. And unfortunately, the Phillies, and they're a good baseball team. I don't know if I've mentioned that on this show, but it is true. That is a very good baseball team, and sometimes it ain't going to be Bryce Harper that beats you. It's going to be some of these other guys. But be that as it may, this bullpen is going to be a difficult thing to manage, because you're not going to be able to use Raisel Iglesias 24 times in September. You're not going to be able to use Joe Jimenez 24 times in September. Pierce Johnson, 20 times in September. It just doesn't work that way. But overall, you do have what amounts to a pretty strong bullpen, but there will be some nights where you're just not going to get it done. And the more guys that you have to use in a given game, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but I'm a firm believer in this, the more guys you had to bring in, the better the chances are that one of them's not going to have it that night. Or that something fluky or crazy is going to happen, and the hitter just happens to win that matchup. But you got Raisel Iglesias throwing. I think he's right now one of, if not the best closers in the National League. Pierce Johnson, Joe Jimenez setting him up. Dylan Lee stepping into some bigger responsibility with no A.J. Minter right now. And, of course, you got Aaron Bummer. So I would have that as kind of the top tier, the leverage arms in your bullpen. And then you got a few guys that you're going to have to get some outs out of, because you're not going to be able to just ragtag those other five guys over the course of a four-week sample. And that's rookie Grant Holmes, who's come in and had some very, I think, important and impressive outings. He was the one that gave it up to Nick Castellanos the other night sometimes. It's just going to be your night in that regard as well. Jesse Chavez has had a difficult second half, not nearly as good results-wise as that first half, but when employed properly or deployed properly in the right spot, I think he can still get some big outs for you. Luke Jackson, I think, is a roller coaster ride the Braves fans thought they were off of. But, I mean, this is a guy that has some major, major strikeout stuff. But in some of those situations, also a bit of wildness and can be homer prone. And that can be a bit of a problem. So it's just finding the right places to use them. But on some of these days and some of these occasions, I guess, just to finish my explainer piece and then move on to stuff that might be more interesting to anybody, including myself, you're just going to have to use who you got because some of these other guys are down. And I think that kind of points to where the Braves have gotten a time or two with their bullpen management here lately. But you got to try to win every series. You got to try to win every game down the stretch at this point. The Braves are firmly in crunch time. They did add a new reliever to their bullpen in John Brebbia. He is a 34-year-old right-hander, a veteran who was pitching for the White Sox this year, had been with the San Francisco Giants, St. Louis Cardinals prior to that, had a pretty good career, not having a great year in Chicago, but I don't think too many White Sox have been enjoying themselves. I mean, I guess Garrett Crochet has. Outside of that, I'm really having some trouble finding pitchers that are having a good year. 6.29 ERA in 54 appearances, 58 strikeouts, though, in 48 and two-thirds innings for Brebbia, but a little bit home run prone. 9 homers across those 48 and two-thirds innings as well. Maybe the Braves can find a way to make a little tweak there. There seems to be a lot to work with swing and miss-wise, and it's worth it taking a flyer. And as we had talked about as well, I mean, this is going to be the roster expansion of September, which allows you to carry at least one extra arm. Right now it's going to be Brebbia, but I think you could look at Daisbell Hernandez as somebody, and Justin Toscano was on earlier talking about that. I think he's on the very short list. If the Braves need a little bit of help in the rotation, need to build in another day with somebody they believe in, though I think they're going to stick with the five-man down the stretch. Ian Anderson, A.J. Smith-Shawver could be on that short list. But as far as position players are concerned, after Eli White got this call-up, I don't know that there's a whole lot down there that the Braves would really need to look upon and bring up to the major leagues, at least not immediately. But Eli White with a little bit of speed, a little bit of outfield defense that you can throw out there late in games as well, he could help out for the Braves bench. Rockies and Blue Jays are going to be the next couple of teams in, and these are series the Braves definitely need to take. I mean, without question. These are two teams that have struggled this year. The Blue Jays did a little bit of selling at the deadline. They didn't sell their major pieces, though. And all of a sudden, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. is swinging the bat pretty well here since the All-Star break, looking a little bit more like his namesake or just getting back to previous form for Vlad Jr. as well. But they did not deal him away. They didn't deal Bo Bichette away either, but a few other pieces. And a club that the Colorado Rockies has not really been able to put much of anything together this year, but did manage to take 2 out of 3 with their comeback victory in that finale on the recent road trip. And that's the kind of thing that the Braves very much need to avoid this time around. They got to win these series. Also of note, we talked about these roster expansions, things going on. So we saw clubs waiving players and putting them out there, making them available. And we've also seen a few players get released, not the least of which Gio Urshela, who obviously came over to play with the Braves after the Tigers cut him loose. And we also saw, as we talked about with Jalen Thompson a little bit earlier here, that Yuli Gurriel, who had been in AAA for the Braves all season long, just got dealt to the Royals. And right before that August 31st deadline, and that was a minor league trade, so it doesn't count against the major league trade deadline. And the Royals added him to the 40-man, put him right into the lineup on Sunday. But not really a place for him with the Braves. You weren't going to play the 40-year-old at third base where he hadn't played in a couple of years, at least not at the big league level. They tried it at Gwinnett. Last I checked, the Braves have a first baseman and a DH, and a second base with Whit Merrifield playing pretty much every day with Ozzie Albies on the way back. Just not a place for Gurriel. But at 40 years of age, what are the odds? He'd spend the whole season in the minor leagues, get traded to a new team, and come right back to the majors to debut against the Houston Astros, where he'd spent the majority of his career. Baseball's a funny game. Speaking of which, former Brave Tyler Matzek, who was traded to the Giants at the deadline in the Jorge Soler and Luke Jackson trade, he got released this week after 5 minor league appearances during a rehab assignment. He had been on the 60-day IL when the Braves traded him over, dealing with that elbow inflammation that shut him down in the first half. San Francisco, though, not going to bring him up, decided to release him instead. And upon doing that, when he went unclaimed through waivers, he has re-signed with the Braves. So Tyler Matzek has joined the Gwinnett Stripers, and we'll see if he's a guy that you could put on the list that could at least see some time in September. But if he didn't get in before that August 31st deadline, which I don't believe that he did, then he wouldn't be postseason eligible for the organization, as far as I know. Even though he started with the organization at the beginning of the year and took about a month-long sabbatical in San Francisco. But be that as it may, for Tyler, the opportunity to pitch some more, he's going to be a free agent this winter. I'm sure he wants to prove to clubs that he was able to get back on the mound and do some positive things before he gets back out there. But there is not, I don't think there are not too many moments of the 2021 season and the run through the playoffs that are more memorable to more people than Tyler Matzek in Game 6 of the NLCS against the Los Angeles Dodgers when he came on in Luke Jackson's mess, no less, with two on and nobody out, and punched out Albert Pujols, Steven Souza Jr., and Mookie Betts. And when Mookie Betts was talking about that, I know I talked about this on the show about a month ago as well. Mookie Betts telling that story is just one of my favorite things. He's like, yep, Matzek came in throwing 1,000 miles an hour. Nobody's going to hit him. And nobody did. And that's just one of the many, many moments that it took for the Braves to do what they did in 2021. But who is going to be, or who are going to be, the guys that can put together the moments to get the Braves into that position again this year? We're going to find out throughout the month of September. As I mentioned, the Braves will wrap up their series against the Philadelphia Phillies on Sunday Night Baseball. Off on Monday, then the Rockies come to town. Three night games, all starting at 7:20. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then it's the Blue Jays for a couple of night games and a matinee on Sunday against Toronto to wrap up that series. And a programming note from the Diamond will not be coming your way on 92.9 The Game next weekend. We are on a full-on football frenzy at this point of the season. I think a lot of people look forward to that time of year as well. But there will be a brand new episode, so you need to make sure you check your podcast feed. You can subscribe to From the Diamond wherever you get your podcast. And with that, it brings us to the end of this edition of the show. My thanks, as always, to my guests. In this case, Justin Toscano of the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. He's got a great Braves podcast, The Braves Report. You can find that wherever you get your podcasts. And Jalen Thompson, who covers the Kansas City Royals for the Kansas City Star. Appreciate him dropping in as well. My thanks, as always, for all of you listening out there. My producer, Dom, for a great job keeping the show running as always. And I'll look forward to catching you next time right here on From the Diamond with Grant McCauley on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. And until next time, so long, everyone.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes.
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or draft pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.